gospel preachers have various ways by which they determine the enthusiasm of the congregations that's asked them to come and work with them for a time. One of the best ways to judge that enthusiasm is the singing. And so if your singing is any indication of your heart's desire to work this week in the gospel of Christ and encourage souls to the obedience of it, we're off to a marvelous start. I appreciate very much the singing, the prayers, and I'm very much encouraged by the invitation to have me come and be with you. As I said at Bible study, Jared and I go back quite a number of years. I don't know if he remembers it or not, but I remember hearing him long before he was married to Becky, and he was just beginning to preach. They had different speaker each evening over a little place called Owensburg. And I went over to hear Jared, and on the way home that night, I told my wife, I said, that boy's going to be a preacher. And he's turned out to be a fine one. I've enjoyed being with him. We've traveled together in the past, shared time together, and studied together. He's still wrong on three or four points, but he'll learn. he is a marvelous Bible student, and I very much appreciate him. He's challenged me, and I'm grateful for that, grateful to be with all of you. But we can spend time in the pleasantries later. It's God's time. Let's give it to him. How hungry have you ever been? There's times when hunger is more devastating than any disease that a man can experience. During World War II, there were several prison camps that the United States liberated. And in one particular camp that my father was a part of liberating, when they came up on that camp, they noticed that there were children who were starving, absolutely starving. Now, I don't know what letter it was. I've always said K-ration, but I don't really know what letter ration it was. But the ration boxes were about 3.5-4 inches long and 1.5 inches on all other sides. And it had a little can of Spam in it. That was something pretending as meat. And 2 saltine crackers, 1-inch square of chocolate, and a Lucky Strike cigarette. When those GIs took out their ration boxes and tossed them up over top of that razor wire fence, they never hit the bottom. Those kids ate that box and all. Now that's hungry. When Israel was released from the land of Egypt, and they got into the wilderness, they weren't all that hungry. They were just tired of the same old thing. They wanted something different. They wanted to be back in the land of Egypt where they had pretty much anything they wanted to eat. They wouldn't starve with hunger. They wouldn't want for thirst. They were comfortable back there. They'd forgotten how well God had protected them under a mighty hand of bondage. There's a lesson in that too. We grow content with where we are. We think we've got it made. We don't have the worries and concerns that other people have. We're well blessed. You ever spend time studying that science project about a frog and a beaker? We tested that when I was in high school. Folks didn't believe that. They didn't believe that a frog could get real happy in a beaker of water, and you set a Bunsen burner under it and boil that water, and that frog just splash around for quite a while, and you get frog legs for dinner. They didn't believe it. We proved it. And that's the way folks get in our world today. They get real comfortable. They think everything's fine and dandy. And then all of a sudden, they're cooked. They don't know how to get out of it. Now that's Israel. You go back to the reading that Aaron did so well just a minute ago. And you'll notice at verse 9 that Moses spake unto Aaron, "You tell the congregation of the children of Israel, you come near before the Lord. He hath heard your murmurings." He's heard you complain. Well, God knew that they needed something. But isn't that an awful way to ask God? They complained about how good they had it. God said, I've heard you. He fed them with quails, as you remember. And then you find at verse 14, there's this other substance that came forth every morning except Saturday. It was called manna. And that's literally what that Hebrew word means. What is it? Now, Aaron read it correctly. They called it, what is it? Because they didn't know what it was. And that's precisely what manna means. What is it? It was a strange thing. I don't know what coriander seed is, but it looked like it. The psalmist in Psalm 78:25 said that it was angels' food. This is as close to heaven then and its meal that mankind would ever come, isn't it? This was angel food. But it looked like coriander seed. I don't know what that is. It was white in color, like hoarfrost or just early morning frost. And it tasted like wafers mixed with honey. It had a pleasant taste to it. They were enjoying it. They felt that that was just fine. That's exactly what they needed. But, like everything else, they began to take advantage of God. And so, when God said, you go get this every morning, they decided they'd do otherwise. Let's look at it. Beginning at verse 17 of that 16th chapter, the children of Israel did so. God had said, well, let's go back to 16. God had commanded and said, gather of it every man according to his eating, according to what he had need of. An omer for every man. And for me, I've got a Bible at home that I put, it's called Davis Translation, and no, I'm not going to publish it. But I crossed out the word omer so I could maybe get a picture of how much that is, and I put peck. Instead of a bushel, get a peck. But every man get a peck every morning. Get an omer every morning. According to the number of your persons, how large your family. Take ye every man for them which are in your house. So, they gather this up. In my family, I'd have had four pecks. Got four boys to feed, or did have. Now I've got a whole lot more. You know, when kids get married, they come home and they always bring more with them. But that's fine. I could have fed them all because back then you go out and you get a peck for everybody that's going to be in your house. The children of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. Brethren, look at that. What did God tell them to do? Did he say get more or less than an omer? Did he say go out there and get all you want? Or was he specific and say, an omer? So some went out, some got more, some got less. You don't have to be very bright to figure out that these folks hadn't listened already. Well, they did, they meted out an omer, and he that gathered much didn't have anything left over. And he that gathered little didn't have anything lacking. Who changed that? Who controlled that gathering? Those that gathered too much, did it just spill out of the bucket? Those that didn't gather enough, was somebody scooping out a little bit of theirs and putting it in their bucket? Or did God measure that out because God insists that what he says be obeyed? Which is that? Moses said, let no man leave it until the morning. Notwithstanding, you know, these people are hard-headed. They need to listen. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses. Some of them left it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. Who caused that? Was that just the natural phenomena of this particular food, that it just wouldn't last 24 hours? Moses was angry with him, I'd think so. Stubborn, stiff-necked people. Wouldn't listen. Couldn't get it. Didn't want to get it. Now we go on down and we notice something else here. They gathered every morning according to his eating, and when the sun waxed hot, it melted. Curious. It came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much, 2 omers for every man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Well, now that's what God said you'd do. Why was there a problem with this? Well, we can't get twice as much on Tuesday. No, but you can on Friday. Why? Because you're not supposed to work on Saturday. It won't be there. Don't go looking for it. It's going to end on Friday morning. Now, if you didn't go get it, then you don't get any for Saturday. He said to them, "This is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today. Seethe that which ye seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning." They laid it up till the morning as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither were there any worms therein. And Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye will not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none." And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the Sabbath day to prove Moses wrong. That's what it said. They didn't find it. There wasn't any other reason to go out there. They wanted to prove Moses wrong. Now, you get 2 ideas here. The first idea is that these people were just plain selfish. They had whatever they wanted in Egypt, including the bondage. They'd suffered 420 years in that bondage. God heard their murmurings. He heard their complaints about that. And after 420 years, God releases them from Egypt. They get right out to the brink of the Red Sea. Somebody notices that the Egyptian army's fallen behind, and they yell out at Moses, and they said, "You brought us out here to die. You didn't bring us out here to give us life. You brought us out here to kill us. You got the Red Sea in front of us. You got the Egyptian army behind us. And you just brought us out here so we'd die. We should have stayed in Egypt." They missed 2 things. They missed a pillar of fire that protected them at night, and a cloud that protected them through the day. Where'd that come from? Moses then said, "Stand still." Wonder how still Israel was when he said that. "Stand still and see the salvation of the God." Took his rod and the sea parted. Now you women and men that teach little children, be very careful when you teach them that story. God didn't part the waters and they instantly go across the Red Sea. You read that very carefully. God's caused a strong east wind to blow all that night. How patient did they have to be? You ever notice that? They couldn't just run across that. God made them be patient. This was an impatient people. This was a selfish people. This was a greedy people. You stand still and see the salvation of God. Once they got to the other side of the Red Sea, we'll talk a little bit about it tonight. They rejoiced in that salvation of God. Paul talks about it when he said that they were all baptized in the cloud and in the sea unto Moses. Marvelous thing that God did.
He allowed Israel to be saved, and he condemned and killed all of God's enemies behind them. How long was it on the other side of the Red Sea before they started complaining again? Not long. Not long. You brought us out here to starve us, Moses. You're going to make us dry up for thirst. No, God heard. He heard the complaining. But even after he gave them charge about what they were to do, they wouldn't listen. Now you'll notice that through 40 years of wilderness journeys, this stuff called manna sustained their life for 40 years. That's a long time to eat manna. But it sustained them. They last ate of it when the second generation of Israel, if you will, crossed Jordan into Canaan land as was promised. And Joshua records that the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. Neither had the children of Israel manna anymore, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. They didn't ever have any manna anymore. Gone. Now there was some exception to that, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But there was one exception. We'll see it in just a minute. I want you to concentrate with me about the real purpose for this manna. And to do that, return please to the 16th chapter of Exodus. And we're going to go down through verse 8. They took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin. That's an interesting name for that place. There's a lesson in that. They came to the wilderness of Sin, not Zin, Sin. There's a difference. You study it. Which is between Elim and Sinai. And on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured, complained, never satisfied, against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we ate to the full. For you brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You just brought us out here to starve us to death. Now watch verse 4. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. They'd never had that. They'd had bread from corn. They'd probably had bread from wheat or some other grain, but they never had bread from heaven. It never rained bread before. But God said to Moses, you tell the children of Israel, I will rain bread from heaven. Now notice, the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my way or no. I'm going to prove them. I'm going to put them to a test. Now here's the offer, God says. I'll feed you. But I want to see how well you understand my ability to feed you. How well will you listen to me? How well will you heed the way to gather it? How well will you heed the way to eat it and prepare it? I'm going to ask you, prove yourselves, God says. I'm doing this to see whether you will walk in my law or not. Now, in our introduction thus far, how well had Israel done? I taught school for a while. My grandmother wanted me to go into that for a living, but when I graduated from high school, I'd had all the school I wanted for quite a while. But anyway, I got into it and taught school for 8-9 years, something like that. And sometimes I'd spring tests on my students. They didn't like that. They called them pop quizzes or pop tests. I just said, no, it's research. I want to see how you're doing. My job was to teach study skills. I didn't teach a subject, didn't have a license. But what I did was teach study skills. And they apparently knew that someplace along the line I'd learned a little bit about how to study, so maybe I could help these 7th and 8th graders. And in order to do that, I had to know the curriculum, had to know what they were studying, and then once in a while I had to see whether or not they were really studying. So you have pop quiz. You know they didn't like those at all. Well, Mr. Davis, you can't do that. You're not a real teacher. Oh, really? Why are you getting a grade in my class? We're getting graded? Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're just not prepared for it yet. Well, that's not my fault. Well, would you give us 10 minutes to study before the test? No, you had that last night. You got a test coming up in your class today. You're supposed to be prepared for this. Well, can I look over my notes? No, you can't do that before you go to class either. Now's the time to figure out whether or not you need to use the rest of this hour of study to be prepared for that class. I'm just seeing whether or not you really need this hour. Take that quiz. You know there was a lot of them that couldn't have figured out that quiz to save their neck. They'd never read the material. And those that had read the material, that's all they did, was just read it. They didn't study it. But those that had read it and studied it and came prepared, wasn't any problem at all for them to take those pop quizzes. They had the material in their head. They were ready to go. Now, look at Israel. God says, I'm going to test you. Here's the requirement. You get up in the morning. You can't sleep in. You get up in the morning. It's when the dew's on the ground. That's early. You get your bucket, and you go out and you gather enough of that manna to feed everybody in your household. One bucket per person. And some of them tried two. Some of them tried a half. Then he said, don't you go out there on the Sabbath day. That's my day. You stay home. You gather twice as much on that 6th day. You bake it. You prepare it. It'll be fine. You'll be all right. They didn't listen to that either. Now here's my point. When we get to showing you what the real manna is today, I'm going to ask you this same question. So here's a little advance to your test. When God says, hear ye him, talking about Christ, who do you listen to? When Jesus said, Matthew 11, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. Where do you go? What do you read? What do you study? When Paul said to Timothy, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, 2 Timothy 2:15, what do you study? When Paul again wrote to Timothy and he said, give attendance to reading, what do you read? You see, mankind hadn't changed much over the years, have we? We still do pretty much what we want to, when we want to, and how we want to, and we'll plug in God whenever it's convenient. This was life-sustaining. This is what they needed every day. Now, they didn't appreciate it. They didn't notice the giver of this manna, and we can prove that. Did you notice that the sun would melt that manna? The sun come up, and it's gone. But did you also notice that in order to properly prepare it, they had to grind it and bake it? Do you bake without heat? How'd that happen? And they never seemed to notice that. Notice also, it was always just right. They thought they'd just pack in a little extra. They got home with nothing left over. They got a little lazy, didn't gather enough, and when they got home, it was just right. They didn't notice how that happened. Notice something else with it. Did you see that in Hebrews 16:33, Moses was commanded to gather up a pot of it and put it in the Ark of the Covenant, put it in the most holy part of the sanctuary of God. And it stayed there. In Hebrews 9 and verse 4, Paul writes about that golden pot of manna being a part of the three elements inside the Ark of the Covenant. Never spoiled. Never stank. Never got worms in it. How'd that happen? How is it that that one singular pot of manna was preserved all those years? You see, I can suggest real well then that the people that were gathering it every day, not all of them appreciated the giver, let alone the gift. So then I move on over and I ask this question. Why did they grow tired of it? Why were they so tired of this life-giving substance? At Numbers, the 11th chapter, if you will, please. Notice with me beginning at verse 1. When the people complained, you know, after a while, complaining people get on my nerves. I don't know whether that happens to anybody else or not, but I get tired of people complaining to me. I had a sign one time in my office that the complaint department was down the hall. And they'd come back and they'd say, where is it down the hall? Can't find it. I said, keep looking. It's down there somewhere. It's not here. It bothers me. But here they are. The people complained. It displeased the Lord. The Lord heard it. His anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost part of the camp. Don't do away with that verse. You talk about red hot anger, that's it. And God's justified in doing it. Now how pleased are we with what God grants? The people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. He called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them, and the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There's nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. The manna was a coriander seed, and the color thereof, the color of bdellium. And the people went about and gathered it and ground it in mills and beat it with a mortar, and baked it in pans and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp, that in that night manna fell on it. But they still complain. I find as well over in the 21st chapter, they hated it. They actually said, we loathe this light bread. They hated it. Did you ever have to eat something you didn't like? Now, I noticed on the board back there, and I appreciate it. I really do. I'm obviously a fellow that is well proficient in eating. I can do that very well. And I noticed on the board back there, you've got a meal list, and I'm grateful for that. But let me give you a little heads up, ladies, please. I'm not fond of Brussels sprouts at all. Please. I'll eat them if that's what you serve. I'll be gracious. But I'm not fond of them a bit. Not one bit. But if that's all you had to eat, would you get it down? Would you eat it? Would it sustain you? I can't imagine that wafers filled with honey in the taste would have been bad to eat. Can you? I kind of like that. I go to Bob Evans and I'll get me a biscuit and put honey on it. That's fine. But they loathed it. They hated it. Now because of that, only the faithful ones valued it. They're the ones that took care of it. They're the ones that listened. They're the ones that did not complain. At Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter, beginning at verse 1. Let's slide over there a little bit. The writing tells us that the commandments which I command thee this day will ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware to your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee, to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or not. How did they do? You good Bible students know the answer to that. Out of all that host of Egypt, or Israel, that left Egypt, only two made it to Canaan. Caleb and Joshua. The second generation's the ones that went in. And all the rest of them died in the wilderness because of an element that they had when they got there, and they never got rid of it even after they died. It's called unbelief. God kept talking, they didn't listen. God kept doing, they didn't appreciate it. They left all that goodness. They left every aspect of what God had given them. Now the shadow of that lesson is very simple. The shadow of that lesson is this. Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, and even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life. That harkens back to when Moses was told, you speak to the rock, and it'll bring forth, or you strike the rock rather, and it'll bring forth water. You strike the rock this time. Because of the people's complaints, God set fiery serpents among those people. There were several thousand that died. God said, Moses, you fashion a brass serpent, put it on a pole. And when the people see that, they'll be healed. Now, I've thought a lot about that, and I ask you this. With already so many thousand dead, you ever try to fashion brass? How many people died while that brass was being fashioned? And with knowing now the stubbornness of Israel, how many people died because they wouldn't turn around and look at it? Now let's come to the New Testament for that lesson. Look at the thousands of souls that are lost because they wouldn't turn to Christ. Thousands more when Christ is being taught and they ignore him. Thousands more when he's in their very midst and they won't turn around to listen. How many are going to die because they refuse to listen to what God said to do? I find then that this bread of life is important to us. We talked about 1 Corinthians 10, 1-12, where they were baptized under Moses and in the cloud in the sea. But let's hasten to the close. Go with me now quickly to the 6th chapter of John, and we'll see how this all turns out. Jesus had fed 5,000 people. They were amazed at how that happened. And so they follow Jesus around, and they want to, in essence, they kind of wanted to figure out how is it that he could change 5 loaves and 2 fishes into enough to feed over 5,000 and take up 12 basketfuls of fragments. If they could figure out that recipe, or if they could get that from Christ, well, that'd save on the grocery bill, you know. They wouldn't have to go working all this time to feed their families. They'd do it this way. Well, Jesus didn't give them that recipe. He gave them something better. Beginning at verse 28 of this 6th chapter, the writing says, they said unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? And Jesus answered and said unto them, this is the work of God, that ye might believe on him which hath sent him. And they therefore said unto him, what sign showest thou, that we may see and believe, and thou doest what doest thou work? Our fathers ate manna in the wilderness. And as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus said to them, verily I say to you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. You see a comparison here? They ate a physical food. God sent now a spiritual one. His only begotten Son. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Now you know what the manna is. Then at verse 34, they said unto him, Lord, moreover, give us this bread. Greedy folks. Don't tell us how to earn it. Just give it to us. Well, Jesus in his graciousness noticed that they were hungry, but not for spiritual food. They just hungry for the flesh. So at verse 33, he reminded them, you know, that the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and gives life to the world. Well, how did they accept that? We look at verses 35 to 40. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. He that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you, he that hath seen me, and ye also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father gives me shall come to me. And him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. I'm come down from heaven, not to do my will, but the will of him that sent me. This is the Father's will, which hath sent me, that all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again in the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I'll raise him up at the last day. So the question is very simple. Do you believe him? You see, he's not going to hand it to you. He said, come unto me. Now, I've heard Becky and Jacob both do it since I've been here, or Jared both do it since I've been here. They say to either Aaron or Luke, come here. And they don't say, wait a minute. They come. Now, I've got two boys that, well, Jared and my oldest son are about the same age, so you can figure it out from there. And there's been a whole lot of times I've said to my two boys, come here. And they say, huh, later. Well, when they were under my roof, they learned that later wasn't good enough. When does Christ expect you to listen? When he says, come unto me, where's the invitation in that? Where's the request? Do it if it feels good. Do it if you want to. And then you'll notice, you got to believe on him. That's not optional. But belief alone isn't enough either. You see, the devils believe and tremble. Why is that? Devils won't obey. And since devils won't obey, they die lost. Just like anyone else that'll hear him and not obey. Then finally, he says, obey me. Now, you've learned this morning that Israel didn't do a very good job in that. I wonder if anybody today is doing as good a job at it as it could. The real purpose of manna was to test them, to see whether they would do His will or not. The bread of life today is Christ. The real purpose of Christ is to save you. But the only way that'll work is if you obey Him. He then becomes our bread of life that tests us whether we will do His will or not. Your decision, make it wisely while we stand to see.